Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for the middle of February. It's the 19th, which is President's Day, which I don't really know what that national holiday is about, except that it means nobody can come to church.
They did come to church yesterday. Yeah, I was surprised because it's God has, for the last 3 weeks, decided to bring snowstorms or ice
on
Saturday night.
Yeah.
I feel like he's plotting against me to have no attendance at church.
Well,
or he's winnowing out the real believers from the
ones who have other things to do.
Yeah.
But in this case, I think maybe the snow made people give up and just come to church after all. Since what are they going to do?
They can't do anything outside. That's right. Yeah, so the perfect Sunday weather is in the summer is rainstorm, because no one can go do anything.
Nobody can go hiking.
They have to come to church. The perfect Sunday weather in the winter is too cold to do anything outside.
But no precipitation.
No precipitation capable. Yeah. So you have to. The best thing to do is to come to church.
Because you're just bored and
exactly.
Sad.
Exactly.
I mean, I think we're making our people sound bad, but they do come.
They
to
do.
Church.
They came to church. I was.
No, but in general, they do come.
Right. The 8 o'clock is low when weather's bad, but mm-hmm.
This week was.
Yeah.
By the time church was over, all the snow was gone. So, and it's going to get up to 60 degrees this week, which is really terrible, because probably all the little buds and bulbs are going to think that it's time to bloom, and they're going to stick their heads up, and then it's going to freeze them to kingdom.
I don't know.
Maybe this
is the actual end of winter. I'm looking in the future here.
I don't think so.
In my weather app, and it doesn't seem to be getting colder anytime soon. I can't see any projected.
Because
maybe
winter
this
lasts
stupid
until
rodent
June.
Missed the mark, and he called it wrong.
But winter lasts until mid-June in this part of the world. So it can't be. It will freeze again, and it will destroy any little plants. And so now, just like I had severe anxiety in the fall about the fall foliage, and my anxiety was not misplaced. It was right on track.
Look, I'm looking
because
I'm,
the fall foliage was horrible this year, and there was none. And so people thought I was freaking out, but I knew that it wasn't going to be okay, and it wasn't. Similarly, I am now developing deep anxiety about the spring and the flowers and them coming up. And you're going to scoff at me, but I'm going to be right.
It's
going to be
bad. It's going to be 67 degrees on Wednesday.
I know. That's
in
not,
February.
That's not okay, though.
And
not
then,
okay.
But you project forward to the last day of February, the last week of February. And it's still only going to be 40 degrees. It's still going to be 40 degrees. And that's perfect.
Yeah, but it means it's going to freeze on Easter Sunday. And it's going to be really bad.
Anyway, I'm sure that it's a scintillating, listening
the
experience
weather
for
wasn't
our listener.
Our topic
Let's listen
for
to
the
talk
day.
About weather for the entire.
Well, I think it's an important subject. I mean, I spend a lot of time thinking about it. Okay, but we were going to talk about, rather than that, the end of all civilization and the apocalypse.
Right.
So you're watching I read an article last night posted by a friend about how Barnes & Noble is on its way out. And Barnes & Noble is the last bookshop in America, essentially. There are no more bookshops, and there are no more, little bookshops either. I guess because of Amazon.
Yeah, you can just buy it.
Why
go to Barnes & Noble?
Is on the way out, and I wanted to talk about that. But you were watching a program about how you could put your body into another body.
So this is an ongoing debate that you and I have, whether or not we would want a head transplant.
It's not a debate. I'm not doing that, and neither are you. I don't care what you say. I'm not transplanting your head.
If you don't know, there's a procedure coming up in Europe somewhere. I forget where.
Somebody did it, I think, already.
Oh, have they done it? Did the guy live?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure he didn't live. How would he live?
Because they had worked it out.
It's insane.
The medical science had figured out how to do a head transplant so that
we can't
when
even
your body
avoid
gets really
Russian
old.
Bots.
When your body gets really old, all you have to do is find a body that's terminal, like brain dead, and still warm, and just transplant your head into that body.
Warm.
Easy.
That's disgusting.
Easy, easy, easy.
The word warm.
And then and then you could just can live indefinitely, right?
It's not easy, so, easy, easy. So it's freaky, freaky, freaky.
So anyway, there's this movie that or not movie, this is a series of a series by Netflix called Altered Carbon. I don't recommend anyone to see it because it's another one of those things that, you know, it's a really interesting concept and it's an interestingly done film or series of films, but there's so much nudity in it. It's like it makes me so angry because I want to watch it, but I can't watch it for more than like 15 minutes before boom, suddenly
you have to
two people are having sex. You have to fast forward it or you just turn it off because it's just too much, you know? But it's an interesting concept. The concept is that, you know, a couple hundred years in the future, they've developed technology to encode your person digitally onto discs. And when your body dies, you can just replace, you just replace your body. You take your disc out of your spine and you put it into another. And it's interesting, they call bodies sleeves. They just put you into a new sleeve. And if you're wealthy, you can afford really, well-built sleeves.
Nice.
Yeah. So what happens is your body dies, it goes in storage, and when you put a new sleeve in, it can be revived, and you live out another life. So really, death has been undone by technology,
but in a sick way, right?
And so you have people who are 200 years old, but they look like they're 20, and they've been through, you know, many, many lives. And but what's also interesting about the show is the Catholic Church is calls taking another body a mortal sin, and so Catholics are willingly dying rather than take on a new sleeve. They're giving themselves over to death, and they're protesting in the streets about this corruption of the natural order. And they're not being treated, and the film doesn't treat them, or the series doesn't treat them as if they're lunatics. It treats them fairly, right? They're presented. None of the protagonists are taking that position yet, anyway, in the series. But one of the mothers of the protagonist is very solidly Catholic, and she is always kind of pressuring her daughter not to do that, and she's a sympathetic character. She's not seen as a buffoon. It's an interesting. I just wish there wasn't so much. It's basically, you know, Game of Thrones, which could be an interesting. It was interesting books, could be interesting to watch, but you can't watch it.
They can't. There's no way to film something without making it 100% about.
Yeah.
I had been watching, I sort of liked the first season of Master of None, but then the second season, I lasted 10 minutes and I turned it off because it wasn't even that explicit. It's just, it was so depressing. It was the Aziz Ansari guy. Huh? The guy who got caught up in the Me Too
movement
as well. Right. He had a program on Netflix that was sort of well done, and I liked it at first, but it just turned.
Master of None, what was it about?
He's Indian American, how he can't succeed at any, you know, he can't make it, kind of. It's good, it's embarrassing, it's like the embarrassment of modern life is brought into sharp relief, which I like things like that, but I gave up because it was, I don't need to see, I'm not interested in seeing or reading anything like that. But there's it's weird how like the entertainment industry can't
conceive of having something without
of making a program without having everybody take their clothes off at some point. Or alluding to it very strongly, which is so depressing. Well, I was, I'm reading, I finally finished the, what book was I reading? Oh, I've been trying to finish up Loose Ends, so I'm finally in this Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society book, which is coming out with a movie, which I hope isn't full of nudity. The premise of the book is, you know, how do books help? Like, do they help you get through? But does reading help you get through, in the case of the Guernsey Literary Society, the Nazi occupation of Guernsey? So people were burning books for fuel, and they were burning everything. But and then it got, the war went on for so long, it got more and more dire and difficult for people to survive, and this very small group of people started to read books, and it and they weren't, what was nice about it, many of them, like so many at Good Shepherd, only had read the Holy Scripture up to that point. Like, so it wasn't great readers who started reading. It was ordinary farmers and people who, and laborers who,
well, if you have
for
to read
the
one
first
book,
time in their lives, read something other than hearing the lesson read in church. And one of them picks poetry and starts reading poetry for the first time in his life. Another picks some English translation of Latin. I don't know who wrote the letters. I wasn't listening very carefully.
Cicero?
Yeah, maybe Cicero. And read that over and over and over again through the war. Like, he wouldn't read a second book. He just read that book and would only talk about it, which drove everybody else crazy. But it lifted them. Reading books lifted this little group of people out of the trauma a little bit, or out of themselves. And it was really interesting. I at the same time, I heard this NPR apparently this morning, which I'm not going to listen to NPR, is doing a story about how with social media, every time there's another shooting, the people who are there are traumatized and go through a horrible trouble. But now we all do, because the people who are involved in it will live tweet it. So the whole nation can be traumatized by, is there. And it made me sort of think of the war, like we're in a dark ages time of violence, even though violence isn't really on the rise. It is in the sense that we immediately know about it, and people, including me, don't know how to read. I mean, our last bookstore as a nation is about to close.
Do you think that means you don't know how to read, or do you think it means people just aren't going to the bookstore anymore?
They're not going to the bookstore.
Because like Amazon is there, and people buy.
Yeah, you can read books, but I don't know, the description in the book that I'm reading about bookstores, and reading, it's not just that you read, it's that you are with other people reading. You know, like, Amazon is great. I mean, okay, we've contributed to the downfall of Barnes & Noble because we don't shop there.
It did when sell, we, you know, it used to sell, and it still does, I guess, to some extent, not just sell books, but sell an experience. You go in, you have your coffee at Starbucks, you wander around looking at books. There used to be, remember when it first started, there were couches everywhere?
Mm-hmm.
And nice, comfortable chairs everywhere, and you'd sit down and you'd read a book there, and you didn't have to buy it. You just put it back on the shelf and go. And so it was like a library where the books were for sale.
If you don't ever buy the books, if you read the book there and then you go buy it on Amazon, and you just buy the coffee doesn't cost enough to pay for the experience of being there. So,
but they moved the big plush chairs out though
a while back. Because it wasn't
economically
viable to do that. So the bookseller, and Amazon knows this, has to be willing to take a loss. I mean, one reason why everybody hates Amazon is because they, for years and years and years, were willing to take a financial loss while they undersold everybody else.
Why does everyone hate them for that?
That's because great. They put Borders out of business, Barnes & Noble, when you undercut all the other booksellers.
That's called capitalism.
Yeah, but they were able to carry the loss on their books year after year and after year in a way that other booksellers weren't.
But that's not evil, right?
Kind of is.
No, it's not. It's called the capitalism. It's just smart, innovative company that's doing the...
Except it's online. The physicality of the bookseller has been destroyed by Amazon.
It has been destroyed. Okay.
And we've participated in
that. I agree.
It's
a sad, sorrowful loss that Barnes & Noble may no longer be with us. But it's not an evil, wicked thing for Amazon to compete by underpricing their goods. That's really smart. And so someone else can come along and compete with Amazon doing the same kind of thing or a different thing. And that's how our economy grows. And that's how competition spurs on innovation. And it's good. It's good. We may miss Barnes & Noble, but we don't shop there. We don't do that. I used to love it. I mean, I still love it, but it's just not, I can go online to Amazon and buy a book and have it downloaded to my Kindle that day, right, without having to go through the getting in the car, spending the gas, all that stuff.
Mm. Yes, but if we want to go to a bookstore, we have to drive to Ithaca.
Yeah.
And there are there's a bookstore in Ithaca that's really not, I mean... There, we don't really go to the library much. We don't go to a place where you can see people reading. So, but everywhere that you are, you can see people on their cell phone.
Like, they're reading books on their cell phone, I'm sure.
I'm sure. I'm sure that's what they're doing. I don't know. I'm not saying anything in a moral sense, but I'm having a public lamentation that I know that reading isn't lost. People read, and Audible probably has really helped people consume books more faster than they would have before. But I don't know. I think it's really, it's dark. It's like when you take out the reading, the physicality, the materialness of reading, and you replace it with an electronic thing. It's a lot like taking the soul out of a body and putting it.
So you think reading a book in Kindle is less like real reading than reading a book with bound leather covers.
I wouldn't narrow it down just to the Kindle. I would say the whole thing of poking around a bookstore and being able to talk to other people who are reading and having stacks of books everywhere and occasionally reading on a Kindle. But if all the books in the world were just on Kindle and you could only read them on Kindle and all of the the stacks of paper that we have lying around disappeared.
It would be scary. That would be
really
hard.
I think that would really be really bad.
What happens when the grid goes down and we have no more electricity?
We have no more. And how many of those books can you change because they're only in electronic form? Like, can you mess with them? Can you change their content?
Yeah.
It's
interesting.
Can you delete them? Like, where does the files go? If you're, I don't know. I think if you're going to talk about AI and robots and people, I mean, I think books should be in the mix, and the intellectual, what does technology do to the activity of reading, and so I found out recently, this was, our kids don't go to public school and our house is full, stacked with books, so in our homeschool I don't really do technology. We have books and paper. And at a certain point, they get onto the computer and they start taking online classes. So they have to type and they have to write papers on a screen. But that's sort of a sudden thing that happens in like seventh grade. Before that, there's no computer. They are not writing on a computer. But in the schools, because of Common Core, this is what I've heard, there are no books. There are no books. The students are given worksheets. So there's no, they can't, they're not given a math book, for instance, that they
take home and
yeah, and look through and look at all the things and mark the progress of going through a book or a history book or any book. There's no books. They get given worksheets that are collected and you ended up with stacks of paper, but no books, but and also a lot of technology. I think that that is really curious and a little bit terrifying, because there's something that happens when you hold a book and read it with, see that other people are reading it.
I mean, I prefer to read a book. I mean, I read a lot on my Kindle, but I prefer a book.
To hold a book.
To hold a book. But, I mean, having said that, you know, I really think that the security of our knowledge is at stake, what you're saying. Because, you, again, if the grid goes down,
there's no math worksheets. How do you do calculus?
Well, right.
If you have no calculus books.
Well, I mean, just like algebra. All the great, if say 200 years from now, all of Western literature is digitalized,
mm-hmm.
and no more books are being produced, then knowledge becomes, you could very easily, through some cataclysm, fall into the dark ages.
Where you can't even get back what you had before. Because right now, you know, okay, in the Renaissance and the Middle Ages, people got back what they had before because there were the Greeks wrote it down.
Well, the monasteries
held on to it.
Right.
I mean, maybe that should be something that Christians do, is like hoard, you know, hoard books. Bad books, good books. Like, when I read the demise of Barnes & Noble last night, first of all, I was grieved. I just felt really sad.
Yeah.
And then I thought, if I was going to do one thing to save civilization, what I ought to do is turn this beautiful house into a book place. And we should just fill it with shelves and collect books and, like, keep
pass them onto our children
and make sure that they're okay, like open them periodically and make sure they're not rotting and like so it's really nice in the book, the potato peel pie book, the main character gets in trouble. She's a fire marshal and she sees a library or a bookshop is bombed, and she's supposed to alert other people and like not go to the fire. She freaks out and she runs towards the fire, and then they have to save, because she's so anxious about the books. She has to be saved, and then all the books are burned up. She loses all her books in the war. And it's, you lose all the people, you know, you've lost, it's a cataloging of loss of people, which is devastating. And then you add in books, and it's terrible. It's really terrible. I have no solution, but I might rethink.
Well, if
the whole
we digitalized
house.
All the books, and then we digitalized all the humans.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And then put them in different sleeves.
I think that.
Then
that's,
we have.
Do you download the books into their heads?
You could. I don't know. See, that's. This. I don't know how that works. Not. Universe,
it makes me really afraid.
Would you, if you had the ability to put your yourself in a different body?
No.
No?
No. And if I also had the ability to download all the books into my head, no.
Why not?
I will read them. I will use my mind. I will not mess with what... And I'm also not going to do the sheep-human cloning thing that is also going on this week. No.
It means, in some ways, if they figure out how to make a human body like full of replaceable parts, like a car, you could live indefinitely.
Mm-mm. No.
Unless you get run over by a bus. Well, even then, if you had the sleeve thing, if your spine wasn't broken, they could take out your digital personality and put it in some other body.
I don't want my personality to be digital. I desperately don't.
I mean,
that.
It's an ethical question, I guess, and I kind of agree that the Christians shouldn't ever do something like that if it became possible, because it's you're bridging the gap from, you're kind of stepping over from creature to creator.
All of my Lenten blogging is destroyed if you can't have death. The entire substance of my blogging this week is worthless if we can't have death.
Well, so is the resurrection.
Yeah.
So I guess I wouldn't.
Which
do it.
Is really important. Which one do you prefer, the right, blogging?
Right. Yeah. Because so yeah, that's an interesting thing, because you can have a body that, or you can have interchangeable bodies going on for infinity, or you could have the new body that Christ gives you, which will never die again. Which is better? It's like, realized. It's like, is that okay? So this is kind of a counterfeit of the resurrection, is what it is.
Mm-hmm. It's like in that Hideous Strength, which I think you would enjoy because you're starting to read novels again. There's a head. There's a disembodied head that's sitting there and holding all the things together, and it's grotesque, but it never dies, and it's remaking it. It's surprisingly. I mean, when I read it during the demise of the Episcopal Church, which might be a perfect segue, and it was so prescient. Yeah. It was exact. I was like, wow, Lewis is describing our culture right this second. But I think it would now, 10 years later, I think it would be even more. Huh. He saw what we were where we were going, and he saw it in detail. Like, hideous detail.
The Hideous Strength.
I think you would really enjoy it. I had a hard time reading it because it has suspense, drama,
all those and things that make our movie watching together impossible.
So I think you would actually love the book. And we have it. We have the book. We don't have to order it on Amazon. We own a copy, as long as you don't write in it. See, this is where it breaks down, because you bend the covers back, you write in them, you pour coffee on them, you eat food, like all the things that you, so to preserve civilization, you have to handle the book as carefully as you would handle a human body.
I think it's more comfortable to have a book with coffee stains in it.
And then our children have started to take the books and use them as hot pads for their teapots, because everybody has their own teapot. I'm not sure how that happened. So they'll make a really scalding pot of tea. They'll grab a book off the shelf, a good book, and they'll put the teapot on the book as a hot pad. So I would say that 10% of our books have teapot rings embedded in them forever.
Well, at least they're using books.
Yeah, they do use actual books, but sort of, I don't know. I'm worried. So anyway, I did give us a segue. What's the second segment?
When we're doing three segments, the first segment has to do with
whatever we want.
Well, some kind of substantive discussion of some kind of thing.
Right.
And the second segment has to do with a response to something that we're either watching or reading. And this week we're going to deal with the question of gender inclusive language for God, because the Episcopal Diocese of Washington, I think Washington, D.C., has made... Well, let me read here.
Yeah.
The Episcopal Diocese of Washington is calling on the Episcopal Church's General Convention to consider expanding the use of gender-neutral language for God in the Book of Common Prayer, if and when the prayer book is slated for a revision. Those pronouns aren't preferred, the diocese says, in a resolution it passed on January 27th at its general convention, or at its diocesan convention, held in Washington National Cathedral in the nation's capital city. Instead, the resolution recommends using, quote, expansive language for God from the rich sources of feminine, masculine, and non-binary imagery for God found in Scripture and in tradition. From the Episcopal Church
website.
Where's
the non-binary language for God in Christian tradition?
It seems sort of binary. I mean, okay, so here's the thing. Of course, God transcends. Well, he doesn't transcend, he incorporates gender, right? So if he makes male and female in his image, that means that there are aspects of his nature and character that are more feminine as we would understand it and more masculine as we would understand it. Both sides find their likeness both sides have a likeness of God in them. Mm-hmm. And we do see sometimes, you know, Jesus saying things like,
"As a hen gathers,
I would have longed to gather your children as a hen gathers her chicks." Right, so it's a feminine imagery, right?
Chicks.
Right. But when it comes to addressing God, to talking to God, praying, you don't see the feminine. You don't see the feminine at all. God chose...
self-identifies as male.
Yeah, which indicates that God... the revealed address that he gives, but also in the incarnation, he made himself...
I mean, what's great about it is that I think that's the only... that's the only time that you could use the word self-identification appropriately, because couldn't God identify himself or herself any way that Z wanted, because God isn't limited actually by time,
right,
and a body. So theoretically, God could do whatever he wanted.
Right.
As far as we know.
Well, and
but
also,
God self-identifies, which is so great. This is about blind bee. Nailed it. Like, everybody else can self-identify or pick their pronouns.
Right.
Except for God.
God cannot.
They're not going to use God's preferred pronouns.
Right.
Because.
Which reveals to you exactly how the liberal mind considers God. From the liberal perspective, God is a figment of our. He's someone we create.
He's our self-identification.
We imagine, right? So because we're made in God's image, that means that our understandings of God must be what God is like. And that happens when you decide that revelation is no longer revelation, but it's just the Bible is just the produce of a culture kind of reaching out and trying to comprehend God. And so the use of pronouns there just reflects cultural norms rather than
God's own.
Then God's own. This is who I am, right?
This is who I would like you. How I would like you to address me. I think it's wonderful. I mean, it's wonderful that they would do that, because God really does say in the scripture, "I want you to address me this way."
Yeah.
This is how I would prefer to be known as a
Father,
he,
Son,
not
and Holy Spirit,
as
right.
Zer or her. Like, you shouldn't say the Lord's Prayer, "Our Mother,"
right? Or our androgynous
being,
deity.
Our disembodied personhood in a sleeve.
Right.
Like, God wants to be known a certain kind of way, a way that is offensive to a lot of people. I would say that the idea of sex and gender being so broken, it was a revelation to me at some point in college. To realize that God knew me personally and in myself, not as a man knows a woman.
Right.
But knew me.
As you.
Yeah, as me. As a female.
Not as a man knows a woman. But
right,
as a,
which is right. Really interesting, the way that men know women can be. Funny, I guess. But it's so incomplete. So I think that a lot of women, when they come to the biblical text and they hear all the male language and they've been taught that they're special snowflakes, they think, oh, well, God, in order for God to know me, he must be as I am. He must be female.
Right.
Or beyond gender. Because... men don't know me. They don't relate to me as I am myself. So I think it's important for Christians, if they're going to talk about God, to acknowledge, you know, this is now true for men. I think men should know that God knows them as they really are and not as women know them.
Right.
Because our
masculine and feminine have their home in God. They're not.
Yeah. So he's not going to be like, oh, I don't know why. Why is she acting like that? Why is she freaking
right.
out? You know, the gender part of human relationships doesn't limit God.
Right.
You know, it's a curious thing that he chooses to be male.
It is curious.
Offensive.
Right, and the idea that that's just cultural detritus is also just ahistorical. I mean, there were plenty of feminine images of God in the ancient world. going all the way back. So it wasn't like the option wasn't on the table in the past.
people preferred. Lots preferred the feminine.
Right. So if God were a human our understanding of God were a human creation, there's no reason why we wouldn't have had a feminine.
We could have had a counterbalance.
Right. We could have a God and a mate. We could have had all kinds of things that were going. They were common in the era, but we have one God who identifies, or at least who wants us to address him as in the masculine. And that's in counterbalance to the culture surrounding.
Which, I mean, there's no way to get around it and its offensiveness.
Yeah.
I mean, men are so wrong and bad. I mean, it's just, they're just bad. And they abuse all women and...
The patriarchy.
Yeah, they should be suppressed and kept in boxes.
But that's why the whole idea of a God being protector, provider, warrior, and king, all of those things feed into, rightly so, the traditional view of masculinity and what a man should be with his family. And what a man should be as he's leading any group of people. And you're right, that's now you can't have that. Now, in the name of women having dominance, the heroes in our movies now have to be women taking on those masculine roles, right?
So I just saw this movie trailer at first, because we're still watching the Olympics. I didn't realize the Olympics is going to go on for a whole nother week. I'm probably going to peg out. It's too much. But there's a movie coming out, and I'm not going to go see it, of a woman who's, like, battling with men and winning easily.
I'm sorry.
That scares me, because I don't want women to, like, think that they can just go beat up a man and try it, and then be, you know, like, don't do that.
Yeah.
You if you have a big gun, yeah you could probably win.
But
you can't do the sword fighting and win.
Yeah.
Maybe against a very small, weak man.
Right.
If you were really, really strong. But it's interesting that they're advertising it during the Olympics, where thank goodness, no men have tried to get into the women's sports. I've been waiting a man to come in and be like, I'm going to do speed skating.
Because I'm a woman.
Because I'm a woman.
Right. But didn't... Who is the athlete who really offended lots of feminists because she said...
Serena Williams.
Right.
First of all, she offended them by saying she was about to have a baby or twins. And she said, I'm finally going to experience what it really means to be a woman. The whole world was like... You know, and I don't know, maybe she had to apologize. But then she said, oh, yeah, a high school boy could easily beat me in tennis.
And a well-trained high school athlete.
Yeah, the NPR. No, she didn't say that. She said, I could maybe beat a really weak person. But a regular high school boy could easily beat me in tennis. And the NPR person was like incredulous.
That's great that she said that to NPR. How can you say that?
Yeah. How can you say that? She said, well, they're physically stronger than I am or something. I don't remember what she said. But they couldn't fathom it, because some people have come to actually believe that women are as physically
able,
strong as men. And
this is why when I put out, sometimes I'll say something like, women should not be serving in combat-related roles in the military. And women get on there. Why can't we? We can do it. Well, because
you can be killed. Why would you want to?
First, I mean, even if it were possible that women could actually, in a general way, stand one for one with a man in a battlefield situation, I think it's principally wrong, because I think God set it up to be the opposite way. And in a culture that puts their women on the front lines is a culture that's...
hates women.
Yeah, really. And it doesn't. In which everything is broken down, really.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have to go so far. The only way that I'm happy for women to be in combat is that one, that special unit of Yazidi women who put themselves together into a military unit and went after and started killing ISIS because they had all been they had all been utterly destroyed in their culture, and they got together. They had a female, and they were brutal because they were so angry. And I thought, ah, you go, you do you, because I mean,
that is an exception to the rule. I would like to see a movie made out of that. That would be good.
That would be a great movie. Because women can be really brutal.
I think they're crueler than men are when they have been scorned and they've been hurt and abused, and then they go after the person.
Yeah.
Then there's no mercy.
I don't think there should be.
It's just men tend not to do that way. So be that way. So anyway, I think the whole question of God's gender is just another example of. Later on in the article, a woman who's in favor talks about how she's all in favor of imagining God imagining God more expansively, as if we're the ones who imagine God together.
And as if gender or sex is so limiting, even in a human sphere, that we need to get over it because it's so awful. That's the thing that depresses me, because I think, much like reading an actual book, living in your own body. And the varied expression of sex, so it doesn't upset me when a woman, for instance, is more masculine in her appearance or her thinking. Mm-hmm. And some of my best friends think, if you were going to sort of scale it out on a gendered scale, they might be said to think more like men than women. But they are women, so that's within the range of human sex expression. It's fine. Like, all the women don't have to be tiny and squeaky and look like little Norwegian trolls like I do. And they don't all have to be supermodels, and be 100 feet tall and so thin and gorgeous. And men... a man who is 5 foot tall and works in a math lab is just as much a man, no matter what anybody says, as the man who's 7 feet tall and an NBA. Now, you might make fun of him, which isn't very nice, but he has the DNA of a man.
As long as he does an ice dance, I'm totally okay with his masculinity.
I feel like he should be able to ice dance if he wants to ice dance.
Yes, I guess technically that's true.
So.
Just don't wear the feathered costume.
Yeah, I do. I feel like the feathers maybe are a bridge too far. Okay, but I think it might help in our very broken context if that person wasn't questioned about his masculinity. If he's if he's actually male. He should be allowed to express that maleness, and he shouldn't have to turn into a woman. But that math lab guy, knows that he's going to get a better deal if he turns himself into a woman, because everybody will love him. Why do you think so many men are deciding to become women? It's because they're not stupid, and they know that women get a better deal right now. Unless... all of the ones who are suffering from the Me Too thing.
I just think this is the emperor with no clothes. Over time, this is going to blow. I mean, obviously, some of the men who are saying they're women are not women, and you can't say that, but people know it. They know it. We know the truth. We're just choosing to suppress the truth for a while. I just don't see it winning out ultimately. I mean, look, the five foot math lab guy. He's got a lot going for him. Maybe they made fun of him in high school for being 5 foot, but he's in the math lab, right?
That's what I'm saying.
And so he's gonna get the woman, whereas maybe the star football player who now maybe he won't.
Yeah, or he got her, but he didn't keep her.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, maybe we should go to our next segment.
I know we should.
Which is about what? Usually this is where we talk about our hugely interesting family life.
You've been making, I don't understand, but you've been making venison pie in a compulsive way.
Yeah.
You've made 4 venison pies.
Yeah.
In 3 days or something.
I love making pie, meat pies.
I know, but
I've learned how to do it. See, before my problem was I didn't know how to do it because I didn't know how to get the dough laid out right. But you use parchment paper, and the dough doesn't stick on the counter, and you can just turn the parchment paper over on top of the pie or down below on the pie dish, and so it's great. And now I'm trying to figure out new recipes for the fillings.
Yeah, because you did the same filling like repetitively. I kind of needed you to do a different filling.
Well, I'm trying to figure it out. So when I'm trying to figure something out, I want to do it the same way until you get it perfect. Then you can vary yourself.
Yeah, so that was really good.
You said you didn't like it yesterday. They said.
Well, it was vague, metal, or not metal, but bitter taste.
It's probably the ginger.
Did you just put like a hunk of ginger in without grating it?
Really I grated it really well. So, but maybe I didn't cook it well enough because.
Yeah. Anyway, the crust was really good. And thanks. The children all ate it.
Yeah.
So that was perfect. We decided that they would give up electronics for Lent.
It's been awesome.
But not really, because they still get their Friday and
Saturday
morning.
No, they were surprised.
Morning.
They were, I mean, this. We took away all of their electronics because the house was a wreck and you were sick. And then, you know, they kept going through the day wondering.
Yeah, like, when will we
get our electronics back? And the house is, like, wrecked. So I said, I think Aiden asked me like 2 days ago or 3 days ago, why can't we have electronics yet? And I said, well.
And it was Friday, so yeah. That was a day that they were traditionally supposed to be able to have it. And we were like, I don't know. I mean, the house is really. So they cleaned so much on Friday.
They organized themselves into a little cleaning army, which they should be doing all the time.
All the time. Right. And they really got it picked up. And although now, like, it's sliding into oblivion again, and again, with the thing that has to go away, the thing that I'm bent on going away is the me telling people what to do, you know?
Like, yeah.
People
you
should be able to figure it out.
Yeah, look at the floor. You see the refuse on the floor? That needs to be picked up.
Yeah. Why do I have to say that? That's the part that confuses me. I feel like God trying to explain to an Episcopalian that I want to be called a he. and they're just staring at me like, I don't understand what you're saying.
And you open the book,
like,
and you say, see all the he's here.
I want to be, my preferred pronoun is he.
And it's what?
And
what?
I just
what
want,
are you saying?
I just
you saying?
Like want you to call me by my preferred pronoun because that's what I want. Like, I said it clearly.
Yeah, but and they look at the Bible and they just can't see it. What? What's this?
Yeah, what?
It's like our kid looking at the floor or the table.
Yeah,
or the,
it's just, I don't understand. What? I don't understand. It's really hard. It's so hard. So, yeah.
And it's Lent. What are you giving up for Lent? I forgot to ask you. You can't tell me, can you?
Right, well, my channel editor was like, everybody stop telling me what they're doing for Lent. So I was like,
because you'd be bragging. You would be doing what Matthew 6 says not to do.
I'd be letting my righteousness be known before men. So I'm going to let you guess. By my altered life.
All the things that I would like you to give up? Or?
No, I'm saying like
that should be the next year we should tell one another what to give up for Lent.
I already did tell you.
Did you?
Yeah. I repeatedly told you what I thought you should give up.
Did I give it up?
I mean, you didn't even hear what I said.
Well, did I do what you said?
I don't think so.
Okay, well.
Huh. I mean, I thought that you should. Do you want me to tell everybody what I think you should give up?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I want you to tell me what I should give up.
Yeah. No, what I was saying is I think that you should guess because I'm going to be so awesome and my life is going to be so much better and holier and you're going to be able to see my righteousness just by the way that I'm acting.
You're going to let your light shine.
I'm going to let my light shine. Then I'm going to let you, then you'll be able to tell and later you'll explain to me what it was that I gave up because it will have been obvious. And I will have won. There will be winning. There will be Lenten winning. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the same thing. It should be true. I think you already have noticed what I've given up. So it's not that, but you know, I'm not.
But you didn't give up the thing that I really wanted you to give up. I had thoughts and then you you should listen to me. Like, that should be the way that marriage works, is that the people listen to each other and use each other's preferred language, pronouns, that kind of thing. You should know me as I really am and not as you think that you know me.
Yeah.
Try to be more like God and Jesus. Yeah.
Well, I guess.
We have stuff we've got to do, so.
Yes.
We'll be back next week, I'm pretty sure.